A when the spooks are having it, a jamboree, they break it up with fiendish glee. Ghosts are bad, but the one that's cursed is the headless horseman. He's the worst.
That's why he's a man on Halloween night.
But when he goes to jogging across the land, holding his noggin in his hand, demons yeah. take one look and groan and hit.
Wildcard Wednesday, and the listeners are digging the theme. We're getting close to Halloween here. 773 area code requested Bing Crosby, the Headless Horseman. Yeah! Wildcard Wednesday. Get your requests in now if you want to make them Halloween-y. That's cool. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Yes, it is that time of year, Esmeralda.
Happy, happy Halloween, Halloween, Halloween. Happy, happy Halloween, Silver Shamrock. Happy, happy Halloween, Halloween, Halloween. Happy, happy Halloween, Silver Shamrock.
It's almost time, kids.
Yeah.
The clock is ticking. Be in front of your TV sets for the horrorthon. And remember the big giveaway at 9. Don't miss it. And don't forget to wear your masks. The clock is ticking. It's almost time.
Happy, happy Halloween, Halloween, Halloween.
Yeah.
Happy, happy Halloween, Silver Shamrock.
Song is a, happy, this song is a jam.
Halloween, Halloween, happy, happy Halloween.
Yeah.
I'm going to sing it the whole way. Ireland.
Yeah.
Just the 6 hours. Over and over.
It's yeah. And I'm sure I'm sure the passengers on the plane would really enjoy that.
Oh, they'll love it.
Oh boy. All right. So and of course we have to hear from our friends real quick because they love that song too.
Sink your teeth into that.
Yeah. That's Fartula, Count Fartula, and of course.
That one rattled my bolts.
Right. It's Nick DiGilio. We're going to be talking about some Halloween-type things here. And also, we're going to play an aggravating SNL trivia game. That's where I ask questions to Esmeralda and Dan about SNL. They get them wrong, and I get aggravated. We also have a Blackhawks Express to play from last night's game. That's all coming up. And we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Okay, I have some origins of monsters, ghosts, and spooky things, where they come from, Esmeralda. Because we all know at this time of year, a lot of spooky things come out. Everybody talks about ghosts and monsters and goblins and ghouls and stuff. So we have some of the origin stories. Are you ready for some of these?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the origin of the jack-o'-lantern?
I do not.
The name jack-o'-lantern comes from an Irish myth. There you go, Esmeralda. This is something you might want to throw out in a pub.
I'm sure they'll love it, me just telling them there. Did you know?
Comes from an Irish myth in which a man called Stingy Jack tricks the devil and ends up condemned to walk the earth, unable to get into heaven or hell. According to the tale, the original lantern was carved out of turnip that Jack used to light his way as he wandered in the dark. When Irish immigrants brought this story to America, they discovered that pumpkins, native to their home, made an even spookier candle holder. So it started out as a turnip. Wow. So Stingy Jack, he tricks the devil. And there you go. That's where your jack-o'-lantern comes from. Make sure you tell that story in every pub that you go to in Dublin.
I'm going to tell everyone.
Yes. I'm sure they'll be thrilled to hear it. All right. Do you know the origin of zombies?
Mm-mm.
Flesh-eating creatures are Haitian in origin. Animated corpses raised by voodoo priests called Bacors. Once reanimated, the zombies would remain under the control of the Bacor and do their bidding. The creatures first entered widespread popular culture in the 1929 book The Magic Island by William Seabrook, and 3 years later the film White Zombie. Our modern zombies have been more associated with plagues and viruses than sorcery, but that's how it started. And the early zombie, you know, movies, they always like they took the Haitian mythology and used them, where the person is basically the zombie is basically a slave controlled by the Bacor to do their bidding, and that's basically what happened. And then the zombie that we sort of adhere to today, that was invented by George Romero. I mean, he took the idea of the zombie, the Haitian idea of the zombie, and then he's the one who turned it into what it basically is. What we think zombies now. You can thank George Romero. And this is the first Halloween without George Romero. Oh man. So, but Esmeralda, have you ever seen? No, you because you're not a big horror movie fan. Have you ever seen The Serpent and the Rainbow?
No, but I've heard of it, and I hear it's very scary.
It's really scary. Wes Craven, who also is not with us, Wes Craven directed The Serpent and the Rainbow, and it's not one of his, you know, bigger movies. It didn't make as much money as Nightmare on Elm Street, and it wasn't as popular as the Scream movies, stuff like that. But it's one of the best movies that Wes Craven has ever made. Bill Pullman is in it, and he plays a writer who goes to Haiti to investigate these reported zombies, and he gets into the voodoo of Haiti, and basically what happens is there you can place a spell upon someone and blow this dust on them. When you blow the dust on them, their vitals stop. So their heart stops, the breathing, everything, the vital signs all stop, yet they're conscious and they can feel and they know what's going on. But for all intents and purposes, they're dead. And then about 8 hours later, the stuff wears off and they come back to life. Their vitals come back. And so there have been reported, you know, zombies, you know, of people who were considered dead. And then like the next day they're back out walking around. So Bill Pullman goes to investigate this, and all manner of craziness happens. And at one point in the movie, which is one of the scariest scenes, and for me at least, one of the most terrifying scenes I've ever seen in a movie, because I have sort of claustrophobia and I can't like lay on my back and be pinned because I'll freak out. I will freak out. Like I could never work on a car. You know how you lay down and go underneath the car and work? Mm-hmm. No way would I be able to do that. I can't have anything over me. I have to have access to sitting up or standing up. I can't lay flat back down and be pinned. I go nuts. There's a scene in the movie where they blow the dust on Bill Pullman, and he's wandering around in this village, and he's telling people, don't let them bury me. I'm not dead. Because as his vitals are stopping. So they don't let them bury me. I'm not dead. So his vitals stop. For all intents and purposes, he's dead. So next thing you know, he's in like a morgue, and the bad guy in the movie, they're testing out to see if Bill Pullman is dead. He's not breathing. He's got no heartbeat, but yet his eyes are open. He can see and he can feel everything that's happening, but he can't do anything. He can't move. He can't do anything. So they stick a needle in his eye to see if that wakes him up or her, you know, whatever. They check his breath. They check his pulse. He's dead. So they stick him in a coffin. They put a tarantula on his face and they bury him alive. So, and this scene is excruciating. You got the tarantula crawling on his face. He can't do anything about it. He can't move. His eyes are wide open. They hammer him into a coffin, and then they bury him. And then the screen goes completely black as they put dirt over the coffin. And then it's completely black. The screen is completely black. And then all you hear is when the powder wears off, you just hear and him like in the coffin, like clawing to get out. And I swear to God, the first time I saw this movie, and then again, why would I watch this over and over again? Because it's awesome, but it kills me every time I watch it. First time I saw this movie, I started hyperventilating, and I was like in the fetal position. And Roy Leonard looked at me and was like, "Are you okay? Are you all right?" And I'm like, "Yeah, this is awesome. Oh my God!" You know, so that's the kind of masochistic idiot I am when it comes to horror movies. So, and then I had to sit through it again. You guys saw Kill Bill, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That was pleasant.
That seems less frightening, though, than what you described.
No, let me say, the Kill Bill scene is bad, especially for people who have the phobia that I have. It's really bad. It's not pleasant to watch. But that scene in The Serpent and the Rainbow, I swear to you, every time I watch it, and I'll watch it this next week because it's Halloween and I want to watch Serpent in the Rainbow. It's one of the greatest horror movies ever made. But every single time I watch that movie, that scene comes along, I just hyperventilate and I just like have to rock back and forth on the couch with my knees at my chin. It's just not pleasant. But the movie rules.
I'm sorry, I might have missed. Why did they put the tarantula in there?
Just because they knew, the people who did it to him knew that he could feel everything. They were torturing him. So they threw the tarantula in there because, you know, it wouldn't be pleasant for Bill Pullman, who couldn't wipe a tarantula off of his face as it walked across his face. So, yeah, fun. But that's the movie that goes back to the, like, Serpent and the Rainbow, Esmeralda, that one goes back to the original mythology of the mm-hmm. the zombies. And I remember when it came out in 1988. When it came out, a lot of people were like, well, I've never heard of this stuff before, because a lot of people didn't go back to the original zombie mythology from the 30s, which is different than what Romero did. All right, how about crystal balls, Esmeralda? Do you know the origin?
No.
Crystal balls may have been described by Pliny the Elder in the first century. In one chapter of his Natural History, he discusses magic performed with water, balls, and all sorts of other tools. Some scholars have associated these practices with the Druids, which Pliny also discusses. It's said that the Druids would employ a procedure known as scrying, in which they stared into a reflective surface of mirrors, water, and crystals to gain insight. That goes back to the first century. Crystal balls. All right. That was my radio name in college. Yeah, man, crystal balls! Okay, we have to break here. We'll come back. We got more origins of ghosts and ghouls and spooky things. And if you guys want to jump in with any of your origin stories about spooky stuff, you want to jump in, you got a comment or a question, 312-981-7200. Yeah! Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. Get your requests in. It's any song, anything, any artist. 312-981-7200. 815 area code. The Butcher's Orchestra with Coconut Heart. Wow. I don't know those guys. Dan, are you familiar with the Butcher's Orchestra and Coconut Heart?
This is the first I'm hearing of them, but that's from their record Records to Ruin Any Party.
That's fantastic. Esmeralda, are you familiar with the Butcher's Orchestra and Coconut Heart?
I mean, Coconut Heart, we all...
Yeah.
It's near and dear to my heart.
Yeah.
Those other guys, no clue.
No. Coconut Heart. I used to call my old cat, when I was with Heather, she had a cat named Mr. Ruffle. And he was a big, big cat. And when I moved in with Heather, he became my cat, and we were together. We lived together for like 4 years, and I knew the cat for 7 years. And he had a coconut head. I called him Coconut Head because he had a head the size of a coconut. And then we just started calling him Nut, because it was just for short. He went from Mr. Ruffle to Coconut Head to Nut. That's me. He died last year. He lived to be 19 and a half. He was a beautiful cat. He was a very, very cool kid. He hated me. Oh, Esmeralda, he hated me at first.
How long did it take?
A couple of months, actually.
Yeah, same with V and Smokey.
Yeah.
6 months.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we didn't live together. By the time I moved in, the Nut loved me. We were cool. We were fine.
Right, yeah.
But, like, when I first started dating Heather and, you know, like, spending the night over there, the cat was not happy. Not happy at all. Like, did not like me and was, like, invading on time with Heather. But we grew to like each other a lot. He was just an amazing cat. He was so cool. Just cool as hell. You know what's really sad, Esmeralda?
What's that?
Every time around this time of year, people always publish the stories, or either online or whatever, you read these stories about how it's really difficult to get people to adopt black cats.
Right.
It just makes me so mad. I just get so, every time I read a story, I'm like, what are you people, idiots? You know, so black cats are sitting there. They don't get adopted nearly as much as cats who are not colored black. And I've had in my life three black cats, four black cats in my life. And they're awesome. Black cats are awesome. I mean, all cats are awesome. But like, don't not adopt a cat because it's black.
Yeah, my friend, he actually passed away a year ago as well.
Yeah.
His name was Jasper, and he was just an old, big black cat.
Yeah.
And he was the coolest, and he was deaf.
Oh, that's dumb, man.
it was just like yelling at him, like, Jasper, Jasper! Like, he's deaf.
How did they sound when he meowed?
He'd just be like,
yeah.
Just like yelling. I would watch him sometimes, and I would feed him and then go into the other room, and I think he would be eating and then realize, wait, where'd you go? And then just start like, and you had to go like show him like, hey, no, I'm here.
That's adorable. That's adorable. Did he live a long life?
He did. He was in his senior years when
he
passed.
That's awesome. Yeah, my black cats were named. I had one when I was a kid. His name was Velvet. And that's the one I grew up with. The cat lived to be that cat lived until I moved out. I left my house. I left the house. I stayed longer than most people. I left in my early 20s. I moved out of the house. The cat lived to be 22. And like my mother claims that I killed the cat, because when I moved out, the cat was like, didn't, you know, he was essentially my cat. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so when I moved out, the cat was like,
why didn't you take it with you?
I don't know. I mean, I was moving in with Oaken, and we didn't, you know, it was not going to be one of the, you know what I mean? It's not going to be one of those deals where like, he's not going to want a cat, especially like an old, he was old at this time too. And you know what you were just saying about old cats?
Mm-hmm.
He was old and he had some issues, like health issues, and he was just kind of, you know what I mean? He didn't need to be moved. He had to stay where he, you know what I mean? He needed to stay where he was, familiar with it, with stuff.
Right. Consistency.
And callers and texters are letting us know that they discourage adoption of black cats because they're worried that people will use them for satanic purposes, like sacrificing them and stuff.
I can understand people being weirdos and trying to do stuff with
the poor
cats.
I just feel bad about that, you know? Because black cats are beautiful. They're beautiful. And then my second black cat was named Jackass. No, my second black cat was named Kid. And then my third black cat was named Jackass.
Great.
And this is why, because we got two cats at the same time. My ex-girlfriend and I got two cats at the same time. They were kittens. They were in a litter. And we picked two of them out. One of them was black and white, and one of them was all black. And we didn't know what to name them. So I named one of them Bangs, after the rock and roll critic, the writer Lester Bangs, one of my favorite writers of all time, and I'm one of the greatest writers about music ever. So we named him Bangs, and my girlfriend at the time, Helena, she loved Lester Bangs as well. So we named him Bangs. We didn't know what to name the other cat, but then he started to just be a jackass, like bumping into stuff and knocking stuff over, and we were like, well, this cat is a jackass. So we named him Jackass. Yeah, so... All right. Well, we have to break. We got the news coming up next, and then we're going to come back and talk about more origins to scary stuff. And I also have some really fascinating facts about great horror movies. We're going to jump into that stuff too, right here on 720 WGN. And the news is next. Yeah. Yeah, it's Wild Card Wednesday. All right. Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man. Any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. 630 area code requested the Randells with Martian Hop Doo-Wop. So Martians are hopping around doing doo-wops. That's kind of Halloween-y. All right. Wildcard Wednesday. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How you doing? We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. And we're here till 5. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. We're going to do an aggravating SNL quiz coming up a little bit later on. I'm giving you some origin stories of some spooky things, and I'm also going to tell you some fascinating facts about some great horror movies as well. We're doing the Halloween thing, which we all love very much to do.
Ah!
That's right. Yeah.
Ah! 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 Ah!
Yeah.
Ah!
Okay. I just had to have that play for a couple of seconds, right, Esmeralda? You can't, you know. You had to hear that before you left for Ireland.
Oh, of course.
You know, I mean, that's just, you know.
Unenthusiastic screamer.
That's right. Ah!
And then someone pinched him.
Yeah. I like it. My favorite part is when all the other screaming guys join him.
Oh, yeah.
And then they leave. Yeah. Then they leave. Like, they're in there for 10 seconds, and then they leave.
Came to tell him they're going to go get coffee, and if he wanted to come with. He didn't.
Yeah, he did not. All right. Here's Patrick on WGN. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, Nick. Hey. Good morning, man. How you doing?
All right.
Hey, good. I was, first of all, the thing about Kill Bill, what really made it messed up, not only burying her alive, but the fact that Michael Madsen spit tobacco juice on her before he did it.
Yeah, yeah.
That was just, you know. But, I mean, the way she got out was cool. I wish I had
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'll tell you this, though. I got to tell you this, Patrick. I had Michael Madsen on my show. And I had to hit the dump button three times because he dropped the F-bomb three times during the this is true. It's a true story, Patrick. The first time I was scheduled to have him on, he kind of missed the interview, missed the call. He may have had a couple of cocktails. We're not. So by way of apology for missing the first interview, we had him on the second time. He was a great interview, even though I had to drop the dump button on him. But as a way of apology, the theater in Chicago that they were going to show Kill Bill and stuff sent me an actual. This is a true story, Patrick. They sent me an actual samurai sword signed by David Carradine and Michael Madsen.
They should have got Sonny Chiba to sign it too. That's
cool. Yeah, I know. Get Sonny Chiba to sign it. He made it in the movie, for God's sake.
Exactly.
So I have an actual samurai sword signed by David Carradine and Michael Madsen.
That's awesome. I want your job, man. That's the best job in Portland.
Yeah.
That is so phenomenal.
Yeah.
Wow. But I was telling Dan. You know, black cats do get a bad rep. My family's always had black cats around my entire life.
Yeah.
And when I met my wife, when we started dating, she moved in with me. She had a black cat named Min Min.
Mm-hmm.
And Min Min was the absolute sweetest cat you could have ever been around. Just real even tempered. She's a lap slut. Comes up to you. Oh, just a happy cat. The only fortunate thing, she had leukemia.
Oh, yeah.
So, she died of leukemia.
Yeah.
Then, fast forward, I mean, like I said, we've always had cats around. With it, through 2012, when we lived in the city, we bought two kittens from a pet store, and we named them, they were black, and we named them Midnight and Shadow.
Yeah.
And, you know, but it turns out they were feral, and they were very sick.
Oh, yeah.
So, that's been the bad luck with me. And, you know, my wife nicknamed Midnight, named her Mama Kitty, and there was something off about her, because she just never took to the box.
Oh,
she
boy.
Went everywhere but the mom.
Oh, yeah, no.
As she got older, the thing is, as she got older, her stomach got distended. So we don't know what happened with her. We took her to the vet to get her fixed, and the vet looked at her and just, you know, told us, you're going to have to, you got to put her to sleep.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, the cat we got now, Carlos.
Yeah.
He's the gray version of the Dr. Evil cat. I think they're a Turkish. I forgot what breed they are. Turkish blue or something like that.
Yeah.
And real mellow, even temper cats. And we got him at the vet because the vet wanted us to adopt the cat. She brought him out when he was 3 months old. Most cats, when you get them, they're scared of you. They're kind of a little skittish around you.
Yep.
You know, Carlos, I got pictures of this. We went up to Carlos. We picked him up. He just laid back like, yep, here I am, buddy.
That's
I'm
cool.
All yours.
Very cool.
And we looked at him like, yep, you're coming home with us.
That's very cool.
Oh.
Cool.
And then before we get out, I finally saw Shin Godzilla this weekend.
Yeah, huh?
Rented it from the library, watched it three times.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it, man?
Force of sheer destruction. When he let out that atomic breath.
Yeah.
That was, you know, that was the most epic scene ever.
It was great. It's absolutely great. One of the best Godzilla movies ever made. So
insane.
Yeah.
Insane.
All right, Patrick.
I'm sorry. I was going to say it was amazing. When they did 1998, the Japanese had said they were never going to make another movie. Then 1998 comes out. They come out later with 2000, and they got the whole Millennium series.
Yeah.
And they say, we're going to retire him again at the Final Wars. We do 2014, and now we get Shin Godzilla.
Right, and it's one of the best ever. Yeah.
And are you going to watch the Godzilla series on Netflix?
Sure, of course I am.
Yeah, that was it Monster Planet?
Yeah.
It's an anime.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, I'll be watching it.
All right. Sorry for taking up so much time, buddy. You have a good one.
All right, take care, buddy. There you go. It's Patrick, everybody. 312-981-7200. All right, Esmeralda, another legend that you can tell in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
Headless Horseman.
Oh.
In Irish legends, the Dullahan is a frightening being indeed. Sitting upon a horse, the man rides with his head held high in his hand so that he may scan his surroundings. If that weren't creepy enough, the Dullahan also carries a whip made out of a human spine. Be careful if he stops and says your name because you'll die instantly.
Cool.
That's awesome. That's pretty awesome. So see what happens if you go into a pub in a few days while you're in Dublin and say, "Hey, I'm a Dullahan," and see how many people run out and scream.
Wouldn't I need to, you know?
You'd need to have your head
right?
in your hand, yeah. And you got to. It's going to be difficult to get a whip made out of human spine. That's going to be a hard. I'll figure it out.
They're not on Amazon?
No, I've checked. I always go human spine whip hunting. That's one of my favorite things. Okay, and then let's do one more here, and then we'll jump into some movie facts. Flying broomsticks, Esmeralda. Do you ever wonder where the flying broomstick came from? Associated with witches,
right?
Broomsticks became associated with flying because of something called witches' flying ointment. It was a potion made up of various hallucinogens and the fungus ergo that grew on rye. Apparently, it felt like flying, so basically, drugs. That's it. You the broom was a flying broom because you were flying. That's why. The broom wasn't. You were. You were flying on hallucinogenics. That's a nice origin story. Somebody took some drugs and like, yeah, man. Yeah, my broom is flying, man. Can you see my broom? It's flying. No, it's not. It's sitting against the counter in the kitchen. Oh, no, man. It's flying. Yeah, why don't you go take a nap? Try that out. Okay. Do you ever go as a witch, Esmeralda, for Halloween?
Oh, my goodness. I had to go as a witch maybe 3-4 years running.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had the costume and my parents didn't want to buy me another one.
Oh, no.
So I was always a witch.
Oh, man. They were like, no, you're not getting a new costume.
Yeah, they're like, what? No, you got that one.
You got
be
one.
That.
You be that every year. You know, in the coming days as we approach Halloween, another one of the topics that we're going to do is we'll have people call in. Well, maybe we'll do this Friday. Monday or whatever, but we'll have people call in with the year of their birth, and I will tell them what the main costume was of the year of their birth.
Oh, there you go.
So, like, what was the popular costume of the year of their birth? So that's always a lot of fun. Okay, so we've got some fascinating facts about your favorite horror movies, and this one I knew. I don't know if you guys knew this or not. Stephen King does not like the film version of The Shining.
I knew that.
Yeah. I figured I'd start out with one that everybody pretty much knew. In fact, he hated it, which is why they made the TV version of it years later. In 1983, Stephen King told Playboy, "I admired Stanley Kubrick for a long time and had great expectations for the project, but I was deeply disappointed in the end result. Parts of the film are chilling, charged with claustrophobic terror, but others fell flat." King didn't like the casting of Jack Nicholson either, claiming Jack Nicholson, though a fine actor, was all wrong for the part. His last big role had been in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Between that and The Manic Grin, the audience automatically identified him as a loony from the first scene. But the book is about Jack Torrance's gradual descent into madness through the malign influences of the Overlook. If the guy was nuts to begin with, the entire tragedy of his downfall is wasted. You know, that's actually a legitimate point. Because Nicholson looks like he's nuts from the beginning of the movie. So I agree with it. I think The Shining is a great movie. I think it's great. It's completely different than the book. Have you ever read the book, Esmeralda?
I haven't, no.
Have you seen the movie?
I have, yes.
Yeah. Dan, have you seen the movie? You've seen it, right?
I have, yes.
Have you read the book?
I have not.
It is completely different. Like, it's a lot different. Like, Kubrick changed a lot of it. And I can understand why Stephen King was like, what the hell, man? But yeah, Nicholson's pretty much nuts from the get-go in the movie. It's just, he gets a little crazier. Like when they're in the car driving, he looks nuts. At the beginning, when they're driving to the hotel, it's okay, honey. He saw it on the TV. Then it's like, oh, this guy's already insane. When he's in the job interview when he's being interviewed for the job, he looks nuts. It's still a good movie, though. All right, we got a break here. We got weather, we got traffic, and then more facts about great horror movies as we approach Halloween. Let's see. Here's your forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Today, mostly cloudy, few showerables. Showerables? Showerables. That's a new product from... Procter & Gamble. Yeah, that's what I was trying to think. It was exactly the one I was trying to think of, too, Dan.
Not Huff & Gamble, the Fly Jam artist.
No. So, yeah. Jimi Hendrix, he's standing next to a mountain. He's going to chop it down with the edge of his hand. That's what he's going to do because he's a voodoo child. One of the biggest jams ever recorded in the history of music. Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. 773 area code. Voodoo child. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How you doing? Okay, I've got some fascinating and fun facts about your favorite horror movies. This is one of my favorites. And I knew this one. I don't know if you guys knew this one or not. That Psycho, did you guys know this? Psycho is the first American film to feature a toilet. First American film to feature a toilet and a toilet flushing.
Wow.
Yep, 1960. Psycho is the first American film to show a toilet on screen. It's also the first American film that you hear a toilet being flushed. Yeah. It's Janet Leigh flushes the toilet, by the way. She's trying to throw away some evidence of her crime, and she flushes it down the toilet. First time it was ever flushed. And if I'm not mistaken, All in the Family was the first TV show to play the sound effect of a toilet flushing. And it was always a punchline. You know what I mean? It was always like, where's Archie? And then you hear the toilet flushing, and people would go, he's in the bathroom. yeah. I remember when I showed, because I showed Psycho at my film club a couple of years back, and people were fascinated by that fact. I told them after the movie, I lead a talk. About the film that we show, and people were fascinated by that. They really couldn't get past the fact that that was the first movie to feature a toilet. It took until 1960 for a movie to show a toilet.
And then the Brady Bunch never had one, right?
Well, yeah, they never had it.
Did you never?
I mean, they had. Well, first of all, they had six kids in one bathroom. In other words, that means that Mike's a terrible architect because he designed the house.
I just remember the when they did the parodies or the
movie?
Yes,
yeah.
The movies.
Yeah.
And they're like, there's no toilet in their bathroom.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, you know, but again, I mean, you know, Mike Brady, terrible, terrible architect. I don't know how he got work. He designed the house, six kids, one bathroom. Well, what the hell? Alice had her own bathroom, didn't she?
Let's hope so.
I think so, because she always had, like, you know, moisturizer on her face and rollers in her hair. She had to do that in the bathroom, right? Hey, remember the Halloween episode of Brady Bunch where they try to scare each other? They have stuff rigged up. You don't remember that one?
I do not know.
Where the kids are, I can't remember exactly the plot, but I think it's like Greg and Peter or something set something up to scare the girls, and they rigged up a ghost outside so that they looked outside the window. There was a ghost floating around, and it freaked out the girls. And then the girls were trying to scare the boys were trying to scare the girls. And finally, they, you know, something happened. Oh, I don't know. Something broke. And then Mike said, you kids will never learn. And then they learned their lesson that they won't, oh, we will never try to scare each other again. Sorry, Mike Brady. You terrible architect.
Do you think that's what the girls would say
to
him?
That's what girls would say, exactly.
To be like, you're not my dad.
You're not my dad. You're just a terrible architect. And the boys would say, don't say that about my dad. It's true he's a terrible architect, but he's my dad.
Got real, real
yeah.
On the Brady Bunch.
Mom, how could you marry this terrible, terrible architect? Tiger is a better architect than Mike. Yeah. I'm also trying to remember what the thing, because this is a Psycho, first American movie to show a toilet and a toilet flushing. And I'm trying to remember what TV show was the first show to have a married couple in the same bed.
Oh, wasn't it Dick Van Dyke?
No, they were in twin. They were in.
They were in twins.
They were in twins. Yeah.
Bewitched.
Bewitched. I'd have to. You know what? Maybe it was Bewitched.
I'm trying to think. I read that. I saw it on TV.
Because it was. I mean, obviously, I Love Lucy. They slept in separate beds. So did Dick Van Dyke and his wife. I'm pretty sure. I'm sure that Laura and Rob slept in separate beds. I'm almost positive. Maybe they did. They did.
I think they did.
But I'm thinking it might. You know what's weird, Esmeralda? It might be the Flintstones.
Oh wow!
It might be the Flintstones. I'm not sure.
It's okay when they're animated.
Exactly. As long as it's a cartoon caveman and his wife.
It's not real.
It's fine. You know what? The Flintstones house with the big holes in it that are supposed to be windows, but they're just holes, better designed than the Brady Bunch house. Did you ever notice how long the Flintstones house is?
I haven't. How big is it?
Well, it's got to be huge. You know why? Because, like, anytime they show Fred running, the background just is over and over and over again. If he's in the house, they just show the background going over and over again. So he's got, like, a seven-mile-long house.
It's like, how many bedrooms is that house?
Exactly. Oh, man. And another thing, is he going to eat that whole rack of ribs at the beginning? Does he really need to order that? I mean, that's a lot of food. It's so much food.
He needs the protein.
Tips the car over.
According to this Flintstone fact sheet, Mary Kay and Johnny, a sitcom that ran from 1947 to 50, did feature a couple sharing the same bed, but they were the first animated couple and one of the first.
Wait a minute. There was a show from the 40s?
Mary Kay and Johnny, 47 to 50.
Wow. Okay. All right. But I was half right about the Flintstone thing. All right. Okay, we have to break, and then we'll come back, and I've got more fascinating facts about your favorite horror movies as we approach Halloween, and we'll have an aggravating SNL quiz as well. The news is next. Wow. Just looking at the newsroom and the traffic hut, and they're both boogieing. Vic and Esmeralda getting down to Too Legit to Quit by MC Hammer. Wow. That's the first time I ever saw Vic move like that.
That's my jam.
Come on. Too Legit to Quit. And Vic, you know, were you doing the hand? I didn't see if you were doing the hand.
Too Legit to Quit.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. MC Hammer, 630 area code, Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah! Now, you know that same album, in a much more seasonal choice, he did the song for the Addams Family movie.
Yes.
And that's on the same album as Too Legit to Quit.
Yeah, I was told a story today by V's. V was talking to his mom, I don't know, about Halloween costumes, don't know why. But she said, in that conversation, they were talking about scary movies and things, and his mom got mad at some friends of his younger brother's parents, if that made sense.
Yeah.
Because they showed him the Addams Family.
The movie?
Yes. He's like, he was like seven. He shouldn't be watching that. And I was hearing the conversation, and all I could do was like, but they do what they want to do and say what they want to say.
Yeah.
I just started singing the song. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I was like, really? Addams Family? Addams Family. It's not that bad.
No, both of those movies are pretty innocuous. They're both.
She apparently was a little religious.
They're both good. They're both good. Both of those movies are good. I think the second one's actually funnier than the first one.
Is the second one's where they get the baby.
Would they go to camp?
Yeah.
They send Wednesday and Pugsley to camp.
Yeah, and the baby's got a mustache.
Baby's got a mustache. It's got Joan Cusack in it, who is phenomenal.
Oh, right, the nanny. Yeah. Oh, and she's going to marry Fester.
Going to marry Christopher Lloyd, yeah. Mm-hmm. I really like the second Addams Family. I think it's a very, very funny movie. So, and you know what? They are too legit and too legit to quit. That's what they are.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
Okay. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720. How you doing? We're going to have an aggravating SNL quiz coming up after the 4:30 news. We have a Blackhawks Express that we're going to play back from last night's game. And we are talking about fascinating facts about your favorite horror movies. And before the break, we were talking about the fact that Psycho was the first American film to feature a toilet and show a toilet and a flushing toilet. And that got us to talking about, you know, what was the first TV show where they didn't sleep in, married couples didn't sleep in separate beds and all that stuff. And we were mentioning the Flintstones, and that brought Chucker Rich onto the scene. Hi, Rich.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
Good show tonight. Interesting.
Thank you.
When you mentioned the Flintstones and how long Fred's house was,
yeah,
first thing that came to my mind is both Fred and Barney never smoked in their house. They always went out by the back fence and smoked their Winstons.
That's right. That's in the I can't imagine them having cartoon characters advertising cigarettes nowadays, but they did. They had the it was Fred and Barney were smoking Winstons outside. So I think it was so that the wives didn't see them.
Well, it would soak into the walls, into their stone walls.
Into the stone walls, right. Yeah, that's a good point, Rich. I think we have a little bit of that.
They sure work hard, don't they, Barney?
Yeah. I hate to see them work so hard.
Yeah, me too.
Let's go around back
where we can't see them.
Gee, we ought to do something, Fred.
Okay. How's about taking a nap?
I got a better idea. Let's take a Winston break.
That's it. Winston is the one filter cigarette that delivers flavor 20 times a pack. Winston's got that filter blend.
Yeah, Fred. Filter blend makes the big taste difference, and only Winston has it up front where it counts. Here, ahead of the pure white filter, Winston packs rich tobaccos specially selected and specially processed for good flavor in filter smoking.
Yeah, Barney, Winston tastes good like a cigarette should.
So basically what was happening in there is, Esmeralda, is that the ladies were doing all the chores, and the guys were like, let's just go back so they don't see us and we're going to smoke.
Per usual. And then the dinosaurs would have snarky remarks.
Right. All right, let's get back to some more fascinating facts about your favorite horror movies. Esmeralda, how about this? The Exorcist was the first horror film to be nominated for a Best Picture Oscar.
Really?
Yep.
Well, yeah, because I guess what, before... Was there anything worthy?
Well, I mean, you know, Psycho.
Oh, that's true. Did it get anything or just...
I don't remember if Psycho got it. I mean, I think maybe screenplay. But and there have been other horror movies that were worthy, I think, of Best Picture before 1973. Rosemary's Baby is another one. That could have been nominated.
Oh, right.
But The Exorcist was the first one to be nominated for Best Picture. And the horror genre has never gotten much love from the Academy, though there are still seems to be some bias against scary movies during award season. The Exorcist earned 10 Oscar nominations, including a Best Supporting Actress nod for Linda Blair, who was just 15 at the time. Yeah. Now, can you name the last horror movie to win Best Picture? Exorcist did not win that year.
Okay.
In 1973, The Sting won, if I remember correctly. But can you remember the last horror movie to win Best Picture? Anybody?
Oh, man. Resident Evil. Although I did love that movie.
No, it was Resident Evil 2.
Ah, come on.
Dan, any guess?
Silence of the Lambs.
Silence of the Lambs, yeah.
Oh, see, I wouldn't consider that a horror movie,
come
though.
Come on.
It has elements, but I wouldn't immediately go horror movie.
Oh, I think it's a horror movie.
I would think thriller.
I think it's also a horrible movie, but
dramatic.
That's just me.
Oh, okay.
I can't stand Silence of the Lambs. I hate that movie. And I love horror. Horror movies are my favorite thing in the world, and I can't stand Silence of the Lambs. I morally object to that movie. I think it's a disgusting, vile movie. God. How about this? Robert Englund was not the first choice to play Freddy Krueger.
Oh, I just read something about that.
Wes Craven reportedly planned to have a stuntman play the seemingly immortal youth hater known as Freddy Krueger, but he opted to go with an accomplished actor for the role instead. His first choice was British character actor David Warner, who's a great actor, by the way, who you might recognize from Time Bandits, Titanic, and various incarnations of Star Trek. Warner had to pass on the project, which opened the door for Robert Englund, who rode that role into history. You can't think of anybody else. Now, did you see the remake from a few years ago of Nightmare on Elm Street?
Wait, no. Was he in it?
No, Jackie Earle Haley.
Oh, that's right.
He played Freddy. And it was shot here. It was shot here in Chicago. That it was awful.
Yeah, oh. That's kind of depressing.
It was awful. It was so bad. And but Jackie Earle Haley, who's a good actor, a really good actor, you know? I mean, he's Kelly Lynch, for God's sake, in Bad News Bears. He's the king. He's in Breaking Away.
I was going to say he was... Well, I first saw him in Watchmen.
Yeah, he was... what's his face?
Pretty messed up
Rorschach.
In Watchmen.
He was Rorschach, yeah. So... Here's a cool thing. Jaws doesn't fully appear in a shot until 1 hour and 21 minutes into the movie. You don't see the shark till an hour and 21 minutes into the movie. And it's still scary as hell.
I'll keep that in mind. I have it on my list.
Have you
movies.
Not seen Jaws?
I was watching it, funny enough, when I went to go visit my cousin in Long Beach.
Yeah.
But then I had to leave, so I didn't get to finish
it's such a great movie.
But it's on my phone.
Yeah, well, you'll It's a good one. It's scary, though. I mean, you know.
Watching it over water.
Yeah. Yes, while you're in a plane over water. That's right. That's Hey, do you know that every summer they do this in different parts of the country, Esmeralda, where you could actually watch Jaws while you're in a lake or a body of water?
That's too much.
They have a big screen set up in the vicinity, and you can be in a life preserver. You could be on a little floaty, and you can have cocktails. They have a floating bar that goes through. You can have cocktails and watch Jaws while you're in the water.
That's fine, but I get very twitchy.
Yeah,
I guess when there's certain things, like say there's a bug or something that I think is in a room, so then I immediately just start getting really thinking that there's bugs all over the place. So yeah. I wouldn't be able to concentrate.
It wouldn't be that you'd be scared that a shark was going to bite your leg off while you're in the water.
No, I just think something's in there then.
Wouldn't it be, I mean, I don't know if they do this with oceans.
No, it's in a pool.
It's like a pool or something like that. They should do it in the ocean. That's where you'd be scared.
Yeah, they could corner. Oh, and then you just float away. Oh,
yeah.
No.
That's where you watch it in the middle of the ocean. That's where you should watch Jaws. You should watch it on a boat named Orca. That's how you should watch Jaws, in the middle of the ocean on a boat, on Quint's boat. Yeah, man. Jaws is such a good movie. And that Indianapolis monologue. You know, we've talked about it before, one of the greatest monologues in the history of film, and Robert Shaw was completely bombed when the take that they used in the movie. I have a friend who knows that monologue by heart, actually used it to audition. He's an actor. He would use that monologue to audition sometimes. He would do the Indianapolis monologue. And then one night we were at Simon's, and they had the jukebox on, and the TV was on, and Jaws was on. And so they had the volume down, so you couldn't hear it. So my buddy... We're at the bar, and all of a sudden, he just starts doing the monologue word for word along with... He was providing the audio word for word along with Robert Shaw. And he did the entire monologue. Didn't miss a beat, didn't miss a word, nothing. He delivered it with Quint's accent. And when he finished, the whole bar applauded.
Wow. So does he... When he does do it for auditions,
yeah.
He doesn't like do a different spin on it? He does it...
I think he just does it straight because it's such a famous monologue. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, it really is. It's one of the most famous movie monologues of all time. And I think he never I always cast the guy without auditioning him because he was a terrific actor. But so he never did it for me. So I don't, as a director, he never did it for me. But I think he just did it straight because it's, you know, it's the USS Indianapolis monologue. So, okay, we got a break here. We got weather and we got traffic and then more facts about your favorite horror movies coming up.
I climbed up the door. Opened the stairs, said my pajamas, and put on my prayers. Turned off the bed, crawled into the light, and all because you kissed me good night. That's exactly what happened the night before last time. Now wait till I tell you what happened last night.
Wow.
I powdered my hair.
What? Wild Card Wednesday, everybody. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. Kathy requested Doris Day. I said my pajamas and put on my prayers. Because she got all discombobulated because he kissed her. Doris Day. Wild Card Wednesday. Okay. Hey, it's Nick DiGilio here on 720. Got a few more facts here. And we'll do some of these throughout the mornings here leading up to Halloween. Here's another fact about a classic horror movie. This one I think is hilarious. Faye Ray thought she'd be starring opposite Cary Grant in King Kong. And did you want to hear the story behind this one as well?
She think he was going to be the Kong?
Well, here's what happened. In his attempts to entice Fay Wray into starring in King Kong in 1933, director Marion C. Cooper promised, quote, "You're going to have the tallest, darkest leading man in Hollywood." While my thoughts were flying toward the hope that Cooper might be waiting for Cary Grant's arrival just as I was, Cooper went on to point out that at that giant ape and say, again, that's the tallest, leading, darkest leading man in Hollywood. Oh, man. How about this? Brian De Palma didn't see Sissy Spacek as Cary. This is true. Because when they shot that movie, you know, Cary's supposed to be a high school senior. So she's supposed to be like 17 years old. When they shot that movie, I think Sissy Spacek was like 30.
She looks pretty young, though.
Oh, she does. She
pulled it off.
No question about it. And she's great in the movie. And again, she got an Oscar nomination for it. Though Brian De Palma was a fan of Sissy Spacek's work, he was convinced that he had already found his Cary in another actress. His decision to let Spacek audition at all was mostly out of courtesy to her husband, Jack Fisk, who was the film's art director. Spacek showed up to her audition in an old dress that she hadn't worn since grade school, and her hair was slicked back with Vaseline. When she was done, she waited in the parking lot while her husband reviewed her audition with the rest of the production team. After Fisk came out to tell her the part was hers, she sped off before anybody could change his mind. It's like, oh, the part's mine. Vroom.
I like that. It's like, you can't say anything. I'm leaving by.
Exactly. Oh, man. Let's see. In 2015, George Romero found 9 minutes of lost footage from Night of the Living Dead. While in Maryland for a Monster Mania Con on that year, George Romero shared that he recently unearthed a 16-millimeter work print of Night of the Living Dead, which features approximately 9 minutes of previous thought-to-be-lost footage at the jump cut in the basement, including the largest zombie scene in the film. Well, why haven't we seen this? Why is this not... What? How, why have I not seen this? 9 new minutes? Unearthed 9 minutes? From Night of the Living Dead? Esmeralda, what's going on here?
Has it got an anniversary coming up? That's what they're waiting for.
68. So yeah, oh yeah, it'll be 50 years next year.
Yeah, that's what they're waiting for. But you'll be on a special edition DVD.
That's right. Now I'll have to buy Night of the Living Dead again to add to my 15 copies that I already have. Yeah, 50 years. Next year, it'll be 50 years. Night of the Living Dead. 50 years. Wow, man. All right. Here's another one for you, Esmeralda. This is a cool one. Serial killer Ed Gein. Now, do you know who Ed Gein was?
Yeah.
Okay.
He made people lampshades.
That's exactly right. He inspired 3 major horror movies. 3 separate major horror movies. Can you name them?
Silence?
Yep. Silence of the Lambs.
Silence of the Lambs was one.
Yeah. Think about a power tool.
Texas Chainsaw?
Yep.
Okay.
Last one's not as obvious. The last one's Psycho. Yeah. Psycho.
Oh, okay. So, oh, actually, I think that's the one that if someone tells that one makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, oh, really?
Right? Isn't it? Because he was kind of like in a farmhouse.
Yeah, no. I mean, but he didn't, but the whole skinning of people and stuff like that Gein did, that's not in that movie, but it's in both Silence of the Lambs and Texas Chainsaw.
Oh, but he was like a creepy dude.
He was.
Dude.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, what's his face?
Like Norman Bates.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. I've got a ton more facts here about great horror movies, and we'll share a bunch of these with you leading up to Halloween. We got to take a break here on WGN, and the news is coming up, and then an aggravating SNL trivia contest.